Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
Hello and thanks for joining me for yet another edition of Africa Link. I'm Crispin Mwakideo in Bonn. In this program, Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan makes changes in the top military ranks.
What he does is his own right. He has the right to appoint you and he has the right to remove you from where he appointed you. He's doing his constitutional duty. The Chief of Army Staff that have just been recently appointed, if you can remember, we read it sometimes January 2013.
And it's simply known as the January disease, comes after the holiday season and affects mostly parents.
2014, I started on a very, very, very low note. You need the books, you need the school uniforms, almost everything.
Nigeria's gay community decries the new anti-homosexual law.
Everybody has already gone underground. And I totally understand with them. Nobody wants to go to 10 years imprisonment or 14 years imprisonment. It's just that fair. Because you think you're not gay, you feel you're not consigned.
For more on those stories, stay with me for the next 25 minutes. I'll be right back.
Top story.
Leading Africa's most populous nation is certainly not an easy task. Just ask President Goodluck Jonathan. The Nigerian leader is facing a political crisis which has seen several governors ditching the ruling People's Democratic Party, PDP, for the opposition. Jonathan told party members that a new national chairman for the PDP will be named on Monday. This comes after the resignation of Alhaji Bamanga Tukur on Thursday. No sooner had Tukur stepped down than the contest for his replacement began in earnest. Alhaji Tanko Yasai is a former advisor to former President Shehu Shagari. I asked him whether the PDP defectors will now return after Tukur's departure.
I think whatever motivated the resignation of Bamanga Tukur must be connected with the recent upheaval in the party. So I believe the resignation is intended to pave the way for the party to adjust itself and to pacify those who are opposed to the leadership of Bamanga Tukur.
But do you think that his resignation then will have those who defected return to the party, or it doesn't make any difference?
Well, I made a statement recently, and what I said was that, to my mind, since those who defected had been in the party for the last 2 years, when Bamanga Tukur was the chairman, and also Jonathan was the head of the president, I had people connecting their problem with the party with the leadership of Bamanga Tukur. But I don't think so. Because if they can afford to stay in the party for 2 years with Bamanga Tukur at the helm of affairs in the party, I cannot see why this time, midway through his first term as chairman of the party, which is for 4 years, should they feel that they should leave the party because of him. Maybe there are other reasons which we do not know, but I can't see sense in staying with somebody leading you for 2 years and then midway through you leave without telling the people what is it that new happened that makes you to abandon your leadership.
And who is likely to replace Bamanga Tukur as the next PDP chairman, in your opinion?
I think much will depend on the frame of mind of the governors in the zone. Because in the present day situation in Nigeria, governors and the president have a lot to do in determining who should be in what position in the party. Not only in the PDP, but also in other parties.
And some observers have described the post of the PDP chairmanship as a rotating door, meaning they just come in and after some few years or months, they leave. What are the chances that the next chairperson will have the support of the entire party?
It is true that the PDP has witnessed changes of its leadership, particularly chairman and members of the National Virtual Committee. But until this time, all the previous occasions was as a result of the attitude of the president toward the party leadership. The current one is entirely different from the situation before. The previous party leadership that were removed were largely removed by the president because of some personal differences between him and themselves. Now that we have a new president, this is the first time a party leader is leaving his position under him. Somebody left his position, but not because he doesn't like him, but because of legal hitches.
Former presidential adviser Alhaji Tanko Yahasai. While Tukur was clearing his desk, President Goodluck Jonathan replaced his entire military command. In a statement, the presidency said that Jonathan was seeking to improve on the military's performance in the fight against the Boko Haram insurgency, which is trying to create an Islamic State in northern Nigeria as the country gears for next year's elections. From Abuja, Ben Shemang reports.
The latest reshuffle in the country's top military brass has been interpreted as a way of improving the performance within the military, which has suffered a series of setbacks recently in fighting the Boko Haram sect in northern Nigeria. According to the presidential spokesman, Dr. Ruben Abati, the changes are in line with the Constitution of Nigeria that allows the president to make such appointments, but in consultation with the National Assembly. Senator Ibrahim Musa is a lawyer and represents Niger North Senatorial Zone at the Nigerian Senate. To him, the president has not broken any law with his appointment.
What he does is his own right. He has the right to appoint you and he has the right to remove you from where he appointed you. He's doing his constitutional duty. The Chief of Army Staff that have just been recently appointed, if you can remember, we read it sometimes January 2013 that they are trying to make him to be the Chief of Army Staff. And it has happened today.
The reshuffle came shortly after President Goodluck Jonathan had paid a glowing tribute to the armed forces of Nigeria as they marked Armed Forces Day.
At least some of us witnessed the civil war. And even before the civil war, there must have been a lot of challenges. Some people paid dearly for it. Some people worked for it. And the first group of people we can remember that worked for it and paid dearly for it are the armed forces. We know the challenges they had during the civil war. But for them, Nigeria would have been two or more nations by now.
In Nigeria, whether in military or civilian service, the law provides that civil servants must retire at the age of 60 or must have worked for 35 years. Two of the former service chiefs, Admiral Ola Saad and General Azubuike Ihejirika, have all passed these years. The new Chief of Defense Staff, Alex Bade, comes from northeast Nigeria in Adamawa State. The Chief of Army Staff, General Kenneth Minima, is from Bayelsa State in the Niger Delta area. The Navy is headed by Admiral Usman Jibril, Kogi State in central Nigeria, while Air Marshal Adeshola Amusun from Lagos, southwest Nigeria, is Chief of Air Staff.
That report was compiled by Ben Shemang in Abuja.
Africa Link, bringing you the story behind the story.
Violations in the midst of violence. The United Nations on Friday said the conflict in South Sudan has turned into a horrifying human rights disaster. Ivan Simonovic, the UN's top human rights official, told reporters that mass atrocities were committed by both government soldiers and rebels. His remarks support a report by Human Rights Watch, which accused both sides of killing people based on their ethnicity. Sky Wheeler is a researcher for Human Rights Watch in South Sudan, and she's been telling me how they came up with their findings.
We spent a good portion of time in Juba and in an area called Awerial over the last couple of weeks, and we've talked to around 200 victims or witnesses, and the picture that gets pulled together from all of this is a really horrific one. We've seen cases where civilians have been targeted and killed, or arrested, or beaten for no reason other than their ethnicity. It's been a very sad and disturbing dimension to this conflict that is currently happening in South Sudan. It took place both in Juba, in the capital, where dozens of Nuer men were rounded up, taken to a room owned by a police building. In the end, after a day of these kinds of rounds, there was around between 200 and 300 people in the room, survivors estimate, and police shot through the windows and killed almost everyone. That's definitely the single worst situated case that we've come across. But there are many others as well, cases where men were targeted and killed in the capital.
You've now gathered the evidence that people are being killed based on their ethnicity. How are you going to use this evidence? Are you going to push for prosecution for those perpetrators, or
What are you going to do with this evidence?
Well, I mean, all perpetrators, of course, should be, you know, investigated and charged. But what we would like to see at this point is a wholly impartial international investigation into human rights violations that have taken place during this crisis. It was very good to see in late December the African Union called for a commission of inquiry into human rights violations in South Sudan during the crisis. So a very speedy decision on the AU's part. What would be great would be if they joined forces with the UN. The UN has a lot of experience and expertise. They have the technical people who can do the forensic work, who can do the investigative work, and get a joint AU-UN team on the ground as soon as possible. And for the report that they produce to be, you know, shared with both the UN and the AU, I think this would be a very important step to take, together with the international community as a whole, putting on, you know, ensuring that they use all the leverage that they have with both leaders in the government, but also amongst the rebels or the anti-government forces to ensure that attacks against civilians, you know, immediately end.
South Sudan's Human Rights Watch researcher, Sky Wheeler.
Human rights.
Two leaders, same law, different results. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni has opposed a bill that seeks life imprisonment for those who engage in homosexuality. However, in Nigeria, it's another story. Earlier this week, President Goodluck Jonathan signed a law that bans same-sex unions. Nigeria's gay community has condemned the law as a violation of their human rights. Many of them are now keeping a low profile for fear of being arrested or being harassed. Sam Olukoya reports from Lagos.
The Same-Sex Marriage Prohibition Act makes same-sex marriage punishable by up to 14 years in jail. The law also specifies 10 years in jail for members of gay organizations or those supporting them. Many Nigerians have applauded President Goodluck Jonathan's decision to sign the new law. This didn't come as a surprise, given that majority Nigerians are either conservative Christians or Muslims who see same-sex relationship as an abomination. Domingo Obende, the senator who introduced the bill that was later promulgated into law, says there is no longer a hiding place for homosexuals in Nigeria.
Obviously, what's going to happen is by the time two people come to the street and they are kissing themselves of same sex, definitely you know that these people have something very immoral together. Then, again, when they go to the church, to the mosque, or to the traditionalist to formalize the relationship, that's where these laws will catch up with them.
With the signing of the law, hostility has increased against gays and lesbians. The police have arrested many of them in various parts of the country. Makonju Olumide is executive director of the Initiative for Equal Rights, an organization working to protect the rights of lesbians, gays, bisexuals, and transgenders. He says at least two of his members have received death threats in the last days. He adds that since the law was passed, many homosexuals and people working with them have gone into hiding.
Everybody has already gone underground. And I totally understand with them. Nobody wants to go to 10 years imprisonment or 14 years imprisonment. It's just that fair. Because you think you're not gay, you feel you're not consigned. No. I read most of the things on Facebook, Twitter, and some of the blogs, and I read what people are saying, and I really feel so sad that some people are even saying that the government should be giving $5,000 to anyone that comes to report. What is our insecurity with gay people? Why do we feel generally insecure at the mention of gay?
Nigeria's human rights community have reacted cautiously to the new law. Many human rights activists, like Philip Jagbo, says while the rights of gays should be respected, their orientation runs contrary to societal norms.
As a people, we are against any form of stigmatization, any form of violence to do on those known as gays. But then it will never be accepted in our society. It is not our culture. And as such, what the president has signed into law for people like us is a reflection of our belief, what we believe in.
Many of Nigerian homosexuals have fled the country in the last years. The exodus is likely to increase as long as the new law is in place.
Sam Olukoya in Lagos.
What's new? What's interesting? What matters? Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
And now to something a little bit different. It's a disease that has no medical cure. And no, I'm not referring to HIV and AIDS. I'm talking about the January disease. Christmas time, party and celebrations, traveling and get-togethers. January comes, schools reopen, empty pockets, scratching heads, and lots of question marks. From Harare, Columbus Mavunga reports.
Forget about the names of diseases you have heard or read about. January disease is one of its kind. The symptoms, empty pockets, family breadwinners having to worry so much on how they are going to make ends meet simply because they don't have the money and the means. Aaron Kodzwa is one of the many suffering from the January disease. The father of four children, all going to school, says this year's month of January is worse than the previous years. He is broke after having overspending during the festive season.
2014, I started on a very, 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 very low note. You know, you're preparing, you need the books, you need the school uniforms, almost everything, especially when you know you have got children in different grades, grade one, form one, which means you've got to buy different uniforms anyway.
The entertainment sector is not doing any better. There's low nightlife activity and empty bars in Harare. In this upmarket nightclub in December, any day of the week, it will be fully packed and really noisy. But now in January, it is almost empty with less than 10 patrons. Brian Kapora tells his loyal clients that he has introduced what he calls happy hour by slashing beer by 50%.
Happy hour, I trust people to buy
beer. What is strange about the happy hour is that it is 4 hours long. That is to confirm how nightlife in Zimbabwe has been hit by January disease. Sally Nyamuswe is optimistic that sooner rather than later, things will get better.
It's difficult, but I'm hoping maybe by the end of the month, things will start to stabilize. But it's not really easy for me.
Next year, so that you don't have general disease, what are you going to do?
Actually, what I'm thinking of saving so that by the time I reach January, I could have made enough savings for all my plans.
What about Aaron Kozwa, the father of four children?
What we are looking at is only divine intervention. Things are tough. January disease.
Columbus Mavunga reporting from Harare.
USA.
And now, let's hear now what you, the listeners, and our online readers have been saying about the stories we have been covering in the past week. Shortly before we went on air, Abubakar Jallo joined me in the studios. Abubakar, what are people saying about the stories we've aired or posted on online?
We posted on DW English Facebook page about what our online readers we want covered on Africa Link. We had a few responses and one of these responses caught my attention. Nana Prince Kwesi from Ghana wrote, "Fashion designers in my country, Ghana, should be given more attention. This will encourage them to improve and develop their talent. DW should help promote the necessity of fashion in the country."
Well, thank you very much, Nana Kwesi, for that suggestion. However, please note that DW does not promote issues. We rather strive to report stories that are newsworthy. But just to remind you that we have covered African Fashion Weeks in previous editions, and we do appreciate your suggestion to revisit the topic. What else do we have, Abu?
Now, Crispin, also very hot on the agenda for this past week is the controversial anti-gay law in Nigeria.
Well, we've been reporting that Nigeria's President Goodluck Jonathan has signed a law banning same-sex unions, and the international community has reacted strongly against the law. Our own DW's head of Hausa service, Thomas Mersch, wrote a commentary in which he says Nigeria should be addressing its real problems instead of legislating against a persecuted minority.
After that article, we posted this question on Facebook. Should the international community be weighing in on the debate? Yinka Adeparusi wrote, the international community can weigh in on other pressing issues like corruption, that is, stashing the nation's treasury. Christina Schroeder wrote, it's a step back for Nigeria. How can you forbid people to be what they are from nature? Basi Basi wrote, Nigeria is a sovereign state and therefore has the right to decide what is good for its citizens based on their tradition, custom and values. Therefore, the so-called international community can say what they like, but it will not change anything at all. And listen to this very interesting back-to-back comment between two readers. Mwanje Abubakar said, Western countries must respect African culture. Alexander de Croix responded, African culture must respect human rights. And Mwanje also said, same-sex is not African. Alexander replied, who made you the arbiter of what is and isn't African? The fact that there are homosexual Africans would tend to work counter to your claim. And Mwanje also said, why does the West force it on Africans? Same-sex is satanic. That's all from me. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Abubakar, for your time. And I can bet that this is a debate that will be with us for a long time to come. Please note that these are comments from you, the listeners, and online readers, and we at DW simply edit them to make sure that they do conform to DW's editorial standard. And for all of you out there, you can respond to topics covered on Africa Link or on our website by sending us a text message on +491609575910. I'll repeat the number again, +491609575910. An email to feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to Africa Link DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. And if you're a member of one of our clubs and you wish to have your comments aired on Africa Link, then simply drop us a line with your phone number and we'll call you right back. You'll say we'll be back at the same time next week.
Listen to Africa Link where and when you want. Subscribe to our podcast and you will get the latest edition sent to you. Log on to mediacenter.dw.de/English/podcasts and look out for the Africa Link podcast. Africa Link, bringing you the story where and when you want it.
And before we call it a weekend, a reminder of some of the stories we've covered for you in this edition of Africa Link. A contest for the chairmanship of Nigeria's ruling PDP has started following the resignation of Bamanga Tukur. The United Nations say both sides in South Sudan have committed atrocities. Nigeria's gay community has gone into hiding following the signing of a law which bans same-sex unions. Thanks for listening, and as usual, you can get back to us at Africa Link by simply dropping us a line at feedback.africa@dw.de. Do make a date with Mark Caldwell, who will be in this seat next week. I'm Crispin Wakideu, wishing you a very pleasant weekend.